Welcome to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico, and joining me is...
I'm Scotty Hertz, and I've been a wild rover for many a year.
You've been a what?
A wild rover.
A wild rover.
You know what date is? We never have a show on St. Patrick's Day.
Well, I did wear my Lucky Charms
t-shirt. You did. They're magically delicious. There you go. They're going to send us a case now.
Finally.
Awesome. Pink hearts.
Open Source is a CFRU's political and current affairs discussion show. You can listen to us live here on CFRU every Thursday at 5 p.m. You can also listen to us live online. Just go to CFRU.ca and click on the Listen Now icon at the top right-hand corner of your screen. And you can listen to us anytime by downloading the Open Sources podcast from Podbean on the Guelph Politicast channel. Today, we're going to talk about the bold decision on the part of the Medical Officer of Health in Toronto. I'm not sure if that's like a, you know, double negative because he's the Medical Officer of Health, but anyway. He's endorsing the opening of safe injection sites at three community centers that already offer addiction services. There is some concern, but not as much as you might think. So is this a good move for Toronto? And then after the musical interlude, we will play host to Ward 1 City Councilor Dan Gibson. We will be asking him questions about the pending construction season in the ward, his thoughts on various issues before council, and we will also be asking him questions offered to him by you, the listeners, so stay tuned for that at the bottom of the hour. But first, Tuesday was three times super. It was the third Super Tuesday in a row. It cost us another Republican presidential candidate. We're, of course, talking about the U.S. presidential election. We're checking in again. Before we go into the soup of the Republican side of things, I just wanted to spend some time on the Democratic race because I feel like it always gets the short shrift when we talk about it. And it is an interesting race. It's not as loud as the other one, but there are still some similarities and some interesting differences. Of course, Hillary Clinton was the big winner. There were five primaries on Tuesday. I believe Hillary Clinton won all of them. And she at least came out with the most delegates. Again, she has 1139 versus Saunders 825, and it's a race to 2,383 to become the nominee. So Hillary is easily 300 delegates up on Sanders. Bernie, however, is promising to make sure she feels the burn till June. And it was an interesting week for a couple of things. One is the general tone, I think, of the Saunders campaign has been kind of getting increasingly negative. And certainly if you go online, Reddit, for example, if you go to the political subreddit on Reddit, it is all Bernie all the time. And I think there's a cognitive dissonance between people who are like so hyped on Bernie and what the reality is going to be. Because I think it's really hard to write a scenario where Bernie's going to be the nominee, especially since the revolution, like, he has a list of promises that people are like really into. But it's all predicated on the idea that there's a revolution coming, but there's no sign that the revolution is coming because Hillary keeps winning.
Yeah, and the posts I see are generally like, well, it's so close. I mean, I think that race is closer than anybody thought that
it's pretty
it would
close
be.
Yeah,
you know, Saunders has a lot of traction that they probably didn't think he would have. And of course, the two things that will eliminate him completely are the convention, as you mentioned, and also the superdelegates, because, you know, the superdelegates are people like the mayors of certain cities and high-profile Democrats, something that the Republicans don't have. So that will be the official clobbering. But he's hung in this long, and it's has changed the tone, I think, of what we would normally see, the dynamic of a Democrat. The Democratic race, even though it's down to the two of them. And of course, as we know, the Republicans are getting pared down. Little Marco finally called it a day. I shouldn't call him that, but...
It's so easy, though, because it's such a wonderfully cartoonish nickname. We're getting off the Democrats, though.
Sorry. It's so easy. See how easy it is, folks.
But yeah, I mean, he has had an effect in ways than other just dragging out the process, though. If you listen to Hillary Clinton... Saturday Night Live had that sketch
where Kate McKinnon
morphs from Hillary Clinton to Hillary Clinton as Bernie Sanders. And there is something very real to that. But of course, it's feeding into the narrative of Hillary Clinton not being trustworthy, going to say anything to win. And this is after a week where she said some terribly unfortunate things, like praising Nancy Reagan for her response to AIDS, which was non-existent, which offended the left flank.
Yes.
And then she is at a Fox town hall on Monday where she says, "We didn't lose one life in Libya," which could be like she was talking about specifically the operation, the military operations in Libya to get rid of Gaddafi. But taking that one sentence out of context, it sounds like she's
like Benghazi apologist. Yeah.
She's like Benghazi never happened. Yeah. She was erasing it. And of course, there's a huge contingency on the right flank who want to make Benghazi like Watergate meets the Hindenburg. And you know, there's no there, I think.
Yeah, she spent those 14 hours or whatever under the gun right into the flinch. So it's a non-starter. Really. Yeah.
So she's, you know, she kind of came under attack all sides this week. However, still comes out on top when it's all said and done.
Yeah, because in some ways that'll keep her on her toes.
Mm-hmm.
And if it does drag her a little bit to the left, which it looks like that it will, but, you know, it's one of those things where it's kind of like when the pictures emerged where the comments about Kissinger that Bernie Sanders made. He's like, "I'm no friend of Henry Kissinger," whereas, you know, he's widely considered to be a war criminal, among other things. So there's some bad optics, but she does keep landing on her feet. So, and having said that too, I mean, and not being able to vote in this or whatever, she does have the most experience of everybody that's left.
Oh,
and
for
I
sure.
think even of, I've said this before too, I mean, her CV, if you were just looking at resumes and you're going to hire somebody, it'd probably be Hillary, right? Just by what she's been involved with. But then, of course, there's the Donald.
All right. You want us to go there, so we'll go there.
We're halfway through our 15, so. But anyway, if you have anything else to say about the Democrats, what about the Greens or the Socialists? They have candidates, too. We should talk about them at some point. But
let's talk about winners and people who win huge.
Huge. The hand. I love the hand. I'm admiring Trump's hand. It's just so. I don't know how long it took him to perfect that, but
I don't.
You can't see me waving my hand around the studio, folks. But it's.
He did have a huge night. Donald Trump. He won 4 out of the 5. Only Kasich won on was another candidate that won, and Kasich won pretty huge. I mean, it was his home state, but 47% to Donald Trump's 36%, pretty outstanding. And then if you look at Missouri, it was I think 2,000 votes difference between Trump and Cruz. So he's not invulnerable even amongst the Republicans because, you know, the next phase, he's already talking like he's won and inferring that also that if he isn't the nominee, there will be riots. So he's definitely not. He said riot on during a live interview. So he's clearly not inciting violence. But yeah, it's the general's going to be another thing altogether. But there are still deep divisions in this. And even though little Marcos departed the race.
He's going to sue us. Here's the show.
Well, if he
Marco
listens.
Rubio, people.
But Marco Rubio, his best showing was in Florida, getting 27% of the vote. His home state, but it's still like almost half of
in
what.
The toilet, yeah.
Like a little over half of what Trump took to win it. All the other results were single digits.
Mm-hmm.
So losing Rubio probably isn't losing much, I don't think.
So now it sounds like Cruz will have to be the spoiler if there is one. And then, of course, there's talk of something happening at the convention.
Yeah, they're having a meeting
today. I think Romney's
been
mentioned. Yeah. So there's Paul something Ryan funky too. Can happen at the convention where they don't accept him, and of course, and that probably will be lead to the riots or certain people getting punched out just because. And that's it. It got completely ridiculous, as you probably all heard on the weekend and before too. The Chicago was shut down, and funny enough, somebody had mentioned Chicago in '68, but that was actually the Democratic convention that was the chaos in Chicago back then. It's the opposite now, and of course, in a different, completely different world. But the you know, the threat of violence and violence happening is the same. I was thinking in particular of that one guy who got punched out and then he got arrested. Mm-hmm. That old boy just... And I think I'm finally beginning to figure out Trump. Like, what is it? What is the appeal? Because,
oh,
of course, there's lots of... Yeah. bear with me, folks, because it took me a while to get my head around this. It's like, why does Trump appeal to people? I think it's because he's finally become his persona, and I vaguely knew that he was involved with wrestling.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize to what degree until I did a bit of digging. It's not very hard. You just put in Donald Trump.
You sound like you're in the field for days.
I was digging. Well, it's what I used to do. I got dirt under my nails. But there was one clip of Trump punching out Vince McMahon, you know, in the way wrestlers do, just kind of that fake, you know, he obviously wasn't really punching him out, or was he? So I think that that's, you see that kind of stuff and you think that that's, you know that that's supposed to be an act. Mm-hmm. But the problem is that the act has morphed. He's become his persona, because when you see older interviews with Donald Trump, he's very, you know, he's still the egotistical guy with I did this and that and it's all Trump, yeah. Trump. But the edge isn't there. And now it's something has happened between, you know, The Apprentice, the wrestling, and now. That he's become this caricature almost. Eh? It's really, really, I wouldn't say painful to watch, but it's I'm kind of getting it now. But the other thing is, too, that came up, and they did somebody, I think it was at The Guardian, took the time to watch all of his speeches from when this started.
Mm-hmm.
And he said the
God bless that person.
Yeah, exactly. But their analysis was that he doesn't, you know, the racism is there. Definitely, and the building the wall and the Muslims and all of that. That's not what he talks about the most. What he talks about the most is trade agreements,
yeah,
and that kind of stuff. And I think that appeals to, let's call them, the base as well. You know, Schmo, who's out of a job and can go to the rally at noon because he hasn't been working for ages because his job went to Mexico or wherever, China. Yeah. China, as he always says. There's a lot of truth to that, even though it's coming from Trump. He says some things that would be considered left wing. If you took it completely out and said, sure, okay, who said this? It could be Bernie Sanders.
Well, and supposedly this is what he, stuff, yeah.
Yeah, this is what he talks about the majority of the time. And it's really, really weird.
It is really weird. And your comment about the caricature is interesting because I think people understand that he is in certain ways playing a caricature of himself, and it gives them permission to forgive the things they may not agree with or the overt racisms he sometimes plays with.
Mm-hmm.
Because, oh, no, that's just Donald being Donald. And, of course, there was the famous Carson endorsement last Friday where he's like, oh, there's two Donald Trumps. And,
that was very good.
And then, of course, Donald Trump
comes out
and goes,
he had his hands tented together, by the
way. There's no two Trumps. There's just one Trump. Yeah, the thing that boggles my mind is everybody's talking now about how do you rein this in and what do you do about Trump. And it's like, it's too late, man. It's too late. Everyone's going to have to ride the lightning
and
see where this goes. The math isn't working in his favor just yet. I mean, he has 673 delegates, which is about halfway to the 1237 he needs. There's going to be some tough races coming up.
And they're all winner-takes-all, right? So they have this,
I believe,
weird kind
so.
Of, yeah.
I mean, I think there's a mix of, there's winner-takes-all states, and there's ones where it's like a mix of winner-take-all plus some proportion.
Because there was comment that Kasich winning kind of threw a wrench into his sweep. Like,
right. Because
missing that number itself will not leave him with enough.
Right. So there's some tough math coming up. The thing that boggles my mind is hearing reporters and journalists and anchors talking about, you know, covering him. And you know what? What bothers me is when he gets up at his speeches and goes, look, the press back there, totally disgusting,
yes,
liars. And he called them thieves last Saturday,
yeah,
on one of his speeches. Like,
so remind
what
me
are
of
they stealing? Like, your soul? Because, like, they're using cameras on you?
Reminds me of angry conservative that we knew during our election.
Oh,
seriously, you know.
Flashback.
Yeah.
No, yeah. But no, it's
very similar.
Yes, and I'm...
You cheat on your taxes. You're a bunch of scumbags. Yeah. Like,
but seeing that, it makes me... Like, and it's not like a one-time thing. He does it in every one of his speeches. And I'm always thinking, I said this to somebody yesterday I was talking with over coffee. I was like, if it was me and I was the news director in CNN and I'd watch that, the first time it happened, I would say, tell my reporters and camera people, pack up your stuff and leave. We're not covering him anymore. And I would do that, try and make that for all the major news outlets.
Yeah, but you have integrity. I mean, that's CNN. CNN now is like,
no, you're right.
Eyes on the screen, right?
You're right. I mean, that's the eternal struggle is they want, you know, they
you
want
can't not cover
to watch
it.
The clown car.
Yeah.
But if there was integrity, and it's a no-lose scenario for the media in doing that, because on the one hand, they all think, all the Trump supporters think the media is lying and casting him in a bad light.
Yeah.
So you go away.
Punching them out. Yeah, yeah.
Yes, a reporter.
Well, that
was
guy
choked.
Did get clobbered. That's right.
Yeah, there was a reporter who was choked from Breitbart, which is a Trump-friendly media outlet. But yeah, I would take
Kill
it all
them.
Away, and then they would say, "Oh, you're not treating Trump fairly." It's like, well, I thought we were liars and scumbags and thieves. So why do you want us there?
Dunk the witch, and if she stays sunk, yeah, it's yeah, exactly. She must be a witch.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I mean, there's. I mean, the harm in it is you're not going to get the ratings, obviously, and there would always be somebody who'd have a camera to point at it. But the other hand is, it's just, you know, there was in the beginning, you know, Huffington Post was like, oh, we're going to put in the entertainment section because it's entertaining or entertainment, and we're not going to cover it seriously. And now it's too late to unplug it. So all you can do is.
Wait until Hulk Hogan shows
wait it
up.
Out. Yeah, yeah, wait till Hulk Hogan's made when he's made the VP pick.
That's it.
Trump Hogan, 16.
It's possible he was a governor.
No, Jesse Ventura was a governor.
Oh, Jesse Ventura.
But even Jesse
they look
Ventura
the same, don't they?
Trump.
I mean, that shows how much I know about wrestling. I grew up on Maple Leaf Wrestling, which was out of Hamilton, so it wasn't as yeah. This match is scheduled for one fall.
That's
advantage Trump. Yeah. Yikes. We will talk about it again, no doubt.
Wrestling or Trump?
Both. I think we should do a whole show on wrestling.
I don't know anything about wrestling since like WrestleMania 7.
Roddy Piper.
Yeah, those were
the
days.
Yeah.
Iron Sheik. And...
One anyway. Of them is going to be Trump's running mate.
Well, it can't be Roddy Piper. He
no,
died.
Yes.
Anyway, much more serious issue. Although, you know, running for the president of the United States should be serious. the Toronto Medical Officer of Health, his name is Dr. David McEwen, has come out and is suggesting that Toronto City Council approve of 3 safe injection sites in the city of Toronto. One would be at the Works Needle Exchange. Another would be the Queen West Community Health Center, and the last one would be South Riverdale Community Health Center, who all do some to varying degrees addiction counseling, and that's where they hand out the clean needles in the city as it is right now. So it'd be a kind of like a little bit of a degree shift to, you know, giving your needles, offering a safe place to shoot up. The science seems to say this helps the situation with intravenous drug users. It gets them out of the public sphere, gives them a safe place to shoot up, gives them access to people who can hopefully get them to stop shooting up, gets rid of, you know, garbage in the neighborhoods, you know, needles being found lying around. Dirty
by children,
needles.
Yeah.
Yeah, so what can go wrong? And I mean that seriously. I mean, it's like it sounds like a rim shot, but I mean, yeah, it seems to make sense.
One of the people that was arguing against it, having the people in the neighborhood, said a comment that made her defeat her own argument, saying that, you know, we're against this, but it's already in the neighborhood. Mm. So if that's the case, then why not take it indoors? I mean, the people bring their own stuff. It's supervised. There is medical people on hand, nurses that will take care of you if something goes wrong. But not only that, if you are given clean kit to do what you do, heroin generally, the amount of reduction in secondary diseases, in particular hepatitis C and HIV, if you're preventing those, then you're in essence getting rid of this secondary health emergency beyond people being addicts.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a huge cost savings. And when you argue like that, people, I'll just say on the right side of the spectrum who are, at least we saw at the federal level, pathologically against injection sites. They, Harper & Co., had a hate-on for the one
all the way to the Supreme Court.
Vancouver and lost.
Yeah.
Because
you
have the right to, what is it in the Constitution, safety of the person, right? So even if you're a junkie, sorry, I shouldn't say that, if you're a drug addict, because I'm completely sympathetic to these folks. And interestingly enough, too, when they were going to these places, they're not safe injection sites yet. And speaking to people coming out of them, nobody coming out of there seems particularly, you know, they project this image of these foaming at the mouth drug addicts that are in the alleyways going, everybody came out was, I would say, fairly eloquent on the subject, including the woman who said, I've lost 9 friends. Mm-hmm. And this was in Toronto. And the Toronto statistic is ridiculous. It's like overdoses are up something like 41% over the past few years. It's mm-hmm. like a couple of hundred people have died just of overdose, mm-hmm. let alone the other secondary things, like I mentioned, hepatitis and HIV, among other things that you can pick up from using.
It's gone up 41% in the last decade. That's just straight up overdoses.
Yeah, that's not including all the other diseases. Yeah. So if you're preventing these things, not only is it cost effective, but you're reducing the risk to these people who are in essence ill in a way. I mean, they are being an addict is a sickness, right? It's not, so. Having covering that, then it's an idea whose time is long. And if the medical officer of health is saying that this needs to be done, then mm-hmm. by God, you listen to the guy, right?
Right.
For sure.
Yeah. And I mean, this is one of those things where it's nice that we've had a change in government because Jane Philpott mm-hmm. is in favor of this idea. She talked about it last week. I guess it was sort of like rumored last week that this was what was coming, and somebody asked her about it. Yeah, I mean, it's been working in Vancouver. It's like it's shown tangible results. It's halved the number of users you see in public. It's cut in half the amount of discarded syringes you find. It's cut in half the ejection-related litter. That's a direct quote from the study. Injection-related litter, I don't know if that's like syringe packages or like
you name it,
messed up spoons and that kind of thing. This is what we're talking about when we're talking about evidence-based decision-making. And ideologically speaking, it may not make a heck of a lot of sense. Like, yeah, let's have a place where people do drugs and, make it awesome for them, quote-unquote awesome, to just shoot up. But, I mean, I've always said this in relation to heroin addiction. Heroin is not something you want to be addicted to. It's something your body tells you as you're getting addicted to it. I do not want to be addicted to this. Please give me more. Mm-hmm. It's a completely vexing drug. So I think plus you have to take it through a needle versus other methods you can take drugs with. Mm-hmm. So medical knowledge there, but no, it's a bizarre drug. It's a bizarre addiction to have. So I think any opportunity you have to make it as safe as humanly possible for people to take their shot and to perhaps take the next leap and get off of it, I think is worthwhile. And I'm glad to see, doing the research for this topic, I'm scrolling through trying to find people who object, and it's actually hard to find people to object, which is actually refreshing when it comes to drug policy, because, it was 30 years ago, just say no, speaking of Nancy Reagan.
Mm-hmm.
It was just like anything drug-related, just say no.
Yeah, and that's, that phrase in itself isn't completely harmful, but mm-hmm. obviously, since heroin was first synthesized, no one's ever, it's impossible to get everybody to say no. And part of it, too, is that the impression given from the naysayers on this is that, well, you're just sort of maintaining the addiction and you're not – that's not true at all. I mean, there are efforts made in these places to get people off if possible. I think they're doing their darndest to try.
Yeah,
and
it's not a bar.
No,
the bar has it in their best interest for you to come back and have more drinks.
But that's the impression that that's given. It's like, well, they're just going to keep shooting up until – there are lots of people that do heroin for a lot of years and they can live a long – life. It's not fatal. It's weird in that respect in that, you're probably not high if you're high functioning, whatever. Mm-hmm. But and there's morphine too. I guess that's included in the group. But I think McGowan is Dr. McGowan is getting is not jumping the gun, but getting ahead of the game because the Supreme Court ruling there is no law yet. If I got that right, it's that mm-hmm. the government still has to write the law. So if they can just sort of have this turnkey operation and say, okay, these will be the injection sites, then they're ahead of the game because legally the government has to produce legislation to make this happen as decided by the Supreme Court.
Well, and they need federal government approval.
Yeah. And if they can say, we have these places, just let us, you know,
and it's worth noting
the chairs around.
Yeah, it's worth noting he hasn't said how it's going to be paid for either, or where the money's going to come from. It's presumed because it's a medical issue that there might be some money from the province. But Kathleen Wynne was kind of mum on, yeah, on
Premier Mum, his mum.
Not quite that, but no, because she I don't know if somebody asked her about it when she was in Waterloo Wednesday, or she kind of came up with it spontaneously to try and
because as we know, Kitchener-Waterloo has no addicts, right? Or Guelph, yeah.
Well, exactly. Right. But so she mentioned it, and she didn't. She endorsed the idea in the macro terms, but didn't say specifically if the government was going to do anything.
Sounds
for
like
Toronto.
Every single policy.
yeah.
Sorry, that was a bit of commentary there, but yeah, true enough. So if they can, and we'll probably see it out this way too. I have no doubt. Like once this all gets established and there are places ready to go, then we will see it out this way as well. But this seems to have been in the pipe for a long time, right?
Like, so to speak.
Yeah, in the pipe. When did Insight start? It's probably about 10 years ago, right?
Oh, it's at least that.
And the Conservatives had a hate about it from day one. Yeah. So it's taken that long for this to evolve, and hopefully it will evolve to the point where we do see it happening. I think we're both on the same page on this, and of course, if, yeah, if the Department of Health is as well, harm reduction is very important.
Yeah,
it's. I can't say enough about it. I've got to run out of adjectives to describe it. It's like,
I think the most staunch defense. Well, first of all, the police union came out against it, but I think that's kind of pro forma. The only other voice I could really find against it was Giorgio Mammolini.
Mr. One Vote, along with Rob Ford. And
well, true enough. But his argument was it shouldn't be in these community centers. It should be like at hospital pharmacies, which I guess is maybe a matter of degrees. So even on like a most basic idea level, you know, you have the right-wing conservatives, the right-wing councillors in Toronto being in favor of it in principle. You know, we're talking about real estate now. So if
Mammoliti knows about real estate if you do your homework. So. Yes. Yeah. But there are going to be – I mean, I could honestly say like people probably don't want it right next door to them. But
no.
if the – resources are already there, and it's a matter of just taking it that one step further.
Right.
Like, as I said before, they have this image of, like, high people running around the neighborhood. It's better than your dog getting into the syringes or the kids. For a while, I lived beside Central Tech in Toronto at Bloor and Bathurst. And, I mean, every time we went there for a walk or whatever, there was junk everywhere all the time. And somebody has to go out and clean all that up. And this is – I'm talking a lot of years ago, right?
Mm-hmm.
But now, I mean, if it's set, then it's set. There's Sharps containers in almost every washroom now, supposedly for people with diabetes, obviously, but maybe not necessarily.
Yeah.
But if you're keeping that stuff out of the garbage, then more power to y'all. So.
Exactly. And just before we go to break, Donald Trump literally just tweeted this. He said, "Video game violence and glorification must be stopped. It is creating monsters."
Oh,
so
don't tell those guys down the hall. They're listening to us, right?
It's just in all the discussion this week about who's creating violence and who's inciting riots. That's like one of those tweets from Donald Trump that has me like convinced it's he's doing performance art. But I'll leave that there.
It's all that punk ass little thuggery stuff.
Oh, don't get me started on her. We are going to go to break, and then we're going to bring in Ward 1 City Councillor Dan Gibson to talk about Guelph stuff. But first, some music and some PSAs. You are listening to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, Guelph Campus and Community Radio.
If you have a local business, event, or initiative that you would like to promote, CFRU can help you out. Free public service announcements are available to all not-for-profit events and organizations, while for-profits have the option to choose from an ad package that is competitively priced to give you the highest quality ad at the best deals available. A staff member will guide you through the entire process and ensure that you are pleased with the final result before it is put on air. If you are interested in having an ad or PSA run on our station, please contact outreach at cfru.ca for more information.
But a great roguish villain, whom I did entrust, of all men of letters. nerves. He must be the worst. He gave it her father, who swore bitterly he'd alter a chord with sweet Gragiamocri. A coach was made ready that very same day, and far from this country my love sent away. And if I don't find her, I'll mourn constantly my last dying words, sweet Gragiamocri.
And that was Maria Dunn from her 2001. It's that far back. 2001 CD.
It's like a million years ago.
It's almost the previous century. Gragiamocri, which means my dear beloved or something. A love song for St. Patrick's Day.
Good move not going with the obvious Sinead O'Connor.
Yes. She's the Canadian Sinead O'Connor. No, she isn't. But Maria Dunn, excellent singer. That's actually a Newfoundland song done in the Irish style. So.
Good.
And if you have any requests, feel free to contact us and we will play them.
Call us on the request line.
That's right.
Anyway.
But not right now.
No, well, definitely not right now.
We have a guest.
We are going to welcome Ward 1 Councillor Dan Gibson here and joining us in the studio in what we hope is the first of many chats with city councillors. And we appreciate Dan taking the plunge, being the first. Welcome, Dan.
Thank you, Adam. Scott, it's great to be here.
Great. So for people who may not be familiar with you, you may not be their city councilor, but they may still be interested in what you have to say and your background. Where do you come from, Dan Gibson?
Well, great question. So I was born in Kincardine, actually, son of a nuclear engineer at the Bruce there. So our family, in a career with the energy company of the day, we were all over the place. We went from Kincardine to Oshawa to Pickering, and I grew up. My hometown, I call now, is Whitby, although we've been in Guelph now for 6-7 years.
Wow.
My wife's from Owen Sound, so we've got strong roots throughout the corridor.
The real six, as we call it. Yeah.
That's right.
Not as Toronto stuff. Genuine.
Yeah, so my professional career, as you know, councillors are part-time in the city of Guelph. So my professional career, I'm an environmental scientist with Ontario Power Generation as well. Senior environmental scientist on the hydroelectric side primarily, dealing with large renewable energy projects and a lot of the environmental programs that go along with operating dams on major rivers in the province.
Wow, big job.
Yeah, we get to go from north to south, east to west in the province. I spend most of my time in the office here in Toronto, but I also get out to Thunder Bay, Kenora, Timmins, Ottawa. Those are all sort of the far reaches of where our plant groups are. So it's a fun.
My goodness,
I have a great job. Yeah, both in my career and in my political career too.
I was going to say which one.
Yeah.
So you are a new city councilor. This is your first term, but you've been on council a year now. So, in terms of your expectations when you're running, what you thought your first year in council was going to look like, and where you are now, and maybe looking forward, what's that difference and adjustment period been like for you?
Yeah, great question. I feel like I understood the commitment it would take, even though at times it feels like a commitment is almost insurmountable sometimes. But I had a great few meetings with outgoing counselor, Mr. Favreau, Jim Favreau, who sort of guided me and set my expectations appropriately. We met a few times leading up to my announcement of running. Mm-hmm. So I felt like I was well prepared. And that really did suit me well for the day-to-day job of city council. But, as you know, things change quickly on council. Things change and they're evolving for the city all the time. So, as challenges come, we face them head on and we work together and we always strive for a democratic outcome. So,
yes, and it's sometimes more difficult than you might think.
It is. And, I've had that question posed to me a few times in recent months. And I think
degree of difficulty, consensus building, yeah,
absolutely. But I think there's two parts to the job as a city councilor. First is the city hall role, which you know, gets picked up by the papers and gets covered. It gets covered more. That's the, you know, the wranglings of a city hall and the discussions and debates. But the other part of city council position that I actually find is as rewarding, if not more, is the constituent work. So there's a lot of projects that we want to get accomplished in the ward, and don't always involve needing a council resolution to do them. Things like completing sidewalks, things like you know, keeping our green spaces mowed in the summertime, proper maintenance of our roads, reporting issues. You know, businesses approaching me, asking me if, you know, what's my opinion and can I help them find someone at City Hall that can help them with their problems? Those are, I'm finding, very rewarding experiences. And to that point, it really does counterbalance, you know, any frustrations we may have at City Hall. We generally, you know, it is a rewarding job. That's one thing that I will say.
Well, that's a great place to leap off from, because if there's one place where you're thinking of where the big projects are happening this year, it seems like your ward is it, because York Road is going to get dug up. Victoria Rec Center is going to be torn down and rebuilt, not literally torn down, but it almost seems like it, given the ambitiousness of that project.
That's right.
So in terms of things that might interrupt people this coming year when they're in your area, what are we looking at?
Yeah, so I always kind of build the analogy around making an omelet. We're breaking a lot of eggs in Ward 1 in the next 12 to 18 months. You know, 50 to 60% of the new resident startups are happening in the East End, right on the Watson and Starwood intersection. We're having some repaving projects on Starwood happening. You know, one thing that's flying under the radar a little bit, but I'm very excited about, is the Eastview Community Park, which is up there at the top end. There's some new football fields there. I'm continually communicating back and forth with staff about the change rooms and the bathrooms that are coming that'll really help promote some of the more fulsome use of the facility. Things like football tournaments or new sports leagues that come, you know, a bit of an impediment is, you know, not having a place to change, not having a place to sort of use the facility. So that's an exciting one.
Yeah, I think people may not appreciate, this is a huge tournament town in terms of sports tournaments.
It is. And that does a lot for the weekend economic activity in the city.
So
and then when it comes to infrastructure projects, obviously York Road is a big challenge of mine. I've really appreciated the support we found on council for seeing the York Road corridor redeveloped. It's in the official plan. We'd like to see it intensified. Sort of, you know, I'm on the record of saying it sort of breaks up a bit of the monopoly that's happening out there in the East End for maybe some more commercial space. We'd love to work with the landowner there. We're here. We're ready. We feel like we've set and established the right framework for them to build. We're just waiting on that partner to come forward. So
yes, constantly waiting, it seems.
One of the questions that was sent actually relates kind of directly to that, and from your comments off the top, was Scott F. sent me this one, and he said it's been suggested that some of the rebuilds and upgrades of the streets, in particular York and he mentioned some other ones, have included the upsizing of sewer and water mains intended to service the new developments in the ward, presumably the Woods development, but beyond. And the questions were, what proportion of the costs of these developments are being covered by development charges? And I guess, in your view, do you think should developers shoulder more of the costs of the upgrades?
Yeah, so that's, I believe that's probably Scott Frederick, and that's great. Scott's he's very
you
active
called
on
it. I wasn't going to give.
Yeah, that's great.
Scott X says,
I do appreciate his inputs.
Oh, there you go.
The ward infrastructure projects are a long time coming, as you know. With climate change, we're seeing a lot more volatility in our weather patterns. So we're seeing some more exposure to flooding. So we've had to reinvest as a city in our stormwater infrastructure throughout the ward. And then some of the impediments to future development, and I've spoken about this on the Emico property, are the downstream capacity on the sewage and the water supplies. So when we're doing our sort of fulsome asset management renewal process throughout the ward, we're looking at timing up our sewer and stormwater piping replacements with our streets as well. So you're seeing a lot of our budgets sort of coalesce with each other. So on the water, stormwater, on the sort of water, wastewater side, you're seeing some money set aside for infrastructure. And then again, on the capital side, you're seeing similar funds, and they will marry together once they get into operation. So the specific question about development charges, you know, in built assets, that's a good question to have. when we're talking about infill and building on top of built form properties, how that works. I really think that's a back and forth. I wouldn't call it a negotiation, but I do think that's an important element to have. But I also think the developers look at that as what the potential for the property they're looking at has, you know, downstream capacity and whether or not they'll need more investment to build out their, if they're talking about density, they'll have to factor that into their equations. So,
mm-hmm. I have kind of a related question in terms of density, just not just of people, but of traffic volume, and that it's from Patrick, which is appropriate because it's St. Patrick's Day and it's all about St. Patrick's Ward.
Sure.
So
sure.
Today's the day to ask this question, Patrick. So he was saying, what impact does the city expect to see from the abrupt increase in automobiles in the neighborhood, and what measures is the city taking to maintain the quality of life for Ward residents? I think he's implying that, you know, it's going to be a heck of a lot busier than it is right now. Mm-hmm. I think this person is a dedicated cyclist, and
sure,
I happen to live down the road from this as well. So I'm also curious as to what your view is on that, like what measures are being taken to kind of, you know, so we're not completely overwhelmed by people deking down to York Road to get onto the newly paved York Road to
sure.
to get where they're going.
Yeah, so, I mean, we have the cycling master plan, which, you know, has its merits, and I do support the, when we're reconstructing roads, to be putting in cycle lanes to encourage active transportation. I do support that about 90% of the time. Sometimes it doesn't fit. Sometimes we have to make amendments. Anyone who's been covering City Hall has seen that in the past. Mm-hmm. In terms of new builds, I think of the York Road projects specifically, the far east end of York Road, the one that I'm hoping to have you know, support from council to build in the next few years, where there is a sort of a growing conversation around separated bike lanes and creating this the safe space for both cyclists and automobiles to be operating on the same corridor.
Like that one on Stone. There's that one little piece that's just kind of...
That's right. And then similar
name,
to what
it?
We're seeing on Woodlawn as well.
Mm-hmm.
So we're allowing sort of cohabitation on our roadways. We are going to see increases in traffic. That's not a secret. Our city is growing very quickly. What we do have to... When it comes to safety, though, I'm of the opinion, and I think it's shared, that where we can separate bike lanes from vehicle lanes, that's a good idea, provided we're not putting people out too much on the cycle lanes. We're not detouring them, you know, half a kilometer. But we like to encourage, you know, again, cohabitation in our corridors.
I think that's – I was talking to Michael Drucker from TriTag, and he's talking about bike issues in KW, which is a different city altogether, but sort of similar in a lot of ways. And one of the difficulties in their setting up the bike trail system or bike lanes is they don't have a lot of redundancy in their routes. You know, the direct route is often like the only route to get between point A and point B.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of Guelph, you know, you're talking about it, you know, doing it safely and traffic, and I would agree with that. But however, there is a point, and I'm wondering if that there's discussions in this regard. Is there a point where we reach peak traffic, I guess, is a term I'm looking the term I'm looking for, peak traffic, where it's like we need to get more people out of cars.
It doesn't make sense anymore.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you could look at some of the major urban centers globally, and they've made those decisions, right? So, you know, London, England has a section of its downtown that it's a heavy toll to be driving down there during certain times of the day. Other, like the campus of the university here, they've got a large section of area that is largely the walkable space in the downtown. So as your city grows, those are honest conversations that we have to have. I'm not sure that we're there yet. I mean... It's a funny thing, the car.
it is a funny thing.
We're in large part an affluent society to the point where we all desire a vehicle for personal, most of us anyway, desire a vehicle for personal just ease of schedule.
Right.
So, you know, you really do want to accommodate all facets of transportation. At the same time, you also want to encourage the merits of our transit system, which I still firmly believe in. I think it's great. I've taken it many times. I should have taken it here today, although I'm on a tight schedule. But
we'll forgive you.
Yeah, thanks.
Plant a tree.
Oh. There you go. I'll throw you this one because I know you've seen this question already. Adam on Twitter, not me, another Adam. There are
like the other Scott.
Exactly. Yeah. Asked this one, but I'm going to throw a bit of my own into it, because he asked about the unemployment percentages, shows that we have very employable people in Guelph.
Mm-hmm.
And is there any plans to grow and create significant jobs in Guelph? What I will add to that is, you probably saw the agenda a couple of weeks ago when it was covering
Guelph. I did,
Guelph.
Yes.
Did you see Adam tweeting while it was on?
Live tweeting? I'm always watching Adam live tweet.
Not sure how to take that, but I'll continue. We talked about this last week, that there's, I think, in the point of view of some people, there's a bit of a disparagement, because we're on the one hand, we hear Guelph basically has zero unemployment, but on the other hand, people are unsure about the types of jobs that have. You're talking about a lot of part-time, a lot of temporary work.
And those are great questions. I love this conversation, because it really allows us to, and maybe we should stick on this for a couple of minutes, because it's something that is worth talking about, the unemployment rate in Guelph. It's something that we should celebrate. It's a great number. Very proud of it. At the same time, though, if you really delve into the details, like you say, Adam, there's an element when your unemployment rate gets so low, you start seeing elements in your city where you're saying, well, we can't match the jobs for the skills that we need.
Right.
And we can't match skills to jobs. And there's a little bit of element to that right now. You're seeing a lot of job posts, and you're seeing a lot of the manufacturers, the clean tech and advanced manufacturers, saying we can't find the appropriate people for the jobs we want. Mm-hmm. And we have to help facilitate that. In terms of attracting good jobs to Guelph, again, I love that question too, and I've always gone back to, you know, Ontario is well positioned for three reasons. The 19th century, it was the haymaking days of Ontario, largely because of our proximity to the States and the biggest market that we serve.
Mm-hmm.
You know, our 401 corridor, low dollar and cheap energy.
Right.
Some of those things we're in control of, other things we're not. So as the dollar ebbs and flows, right now we're in a low dollar period, which is good for investment in Ontario.
Mm-hmm.
If we can hold it here for a few years, if we can see the sort of the dollar stay here for a few years, we are, as the Chamber of Commerce talks about, we will see opportunities where U.S. and foreign markets are looking to invest in Canada.
Right.
And we need to be well positioned to grab that. Secondly, you know, our energy rates, that's a topic for another day. But our proximity to the States doesn't change, and that's something
right.
that is, it's well positioned for Guelph. We have a lot of green field industrial lands that are ready to go. It sets us apart from a lot of other municipalities in Southern Ontario that are at their boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
You look at cities like Brampton, they don't really have a lot of area to grow anymore.
That's true.
Whereas Guelph has got a lot of an abundant green field space to put those businesses. We have to do what's in our control, which is work on our tax rates, work on our industrial tax ratios. We're doing that in the next few weeks at council. We're always looking to sort of make them competitive for when those new employers of good and you know, I'll say this too, Guelph has a strong reputation for the clean tech and advanced manufacturing.
Mm-hmm.
So when those companies come looking for a place to invest, we want to make sure that Guelph is positioned well on top of the advantages that already exist. But the advantages that we can establish for ourselves is something that we always have to be diligent about.
And you know what's weird, too? The flip side, because I have a family member who works at the Walmart up at Woolwich and Woodlawn.
Sure.
They have trouble finding people. And it's not that, you know, they can't fill a cashier post with warm bodies. It's finding people who will wait it out, or people who are looking for those manufacturing jobs get hired at a better job. And so there's a lot of turnover that way, too.
That's right. There's two sides to the coin of the low unemployment rate. It's something to celebrate.
Mm-hmm.
Like, look how great we're doing with so many people working. But there's also that element, that underlying element of, okay, we're having some shortfalls in our job matching now. And and I, you know, I drive Watson and I see signs posted for $18-$19 an hour for line workers, and I see other manufacturers in the city with posts out there, and it is, when you look at it, when you look for it, there is signs there that, you know, the job creators are having a hard time finding. And you know, Innovation Guelph and the Chamber of Commerce is hard at work at this, looking to partner these skills matching issues.
Mm-hmm. Did you want to ask another?
Sure. This one is, well, I'll ask my own, actually, because I'm curious.
Sure.
You've gone on the record talking about the Sleeman Center specifically, and trying to encourage more things to happen there. And I'm with you on that, in terms of, because I remember a day, it's a long time ago now, where the Sleeman Center did have other events like Are we going to a beer festival?
Hillside Inside was there 1 year.
Hillside Inside was there a couple of years, I think. The Guess Who came 1 year, The Tragically Hip.
That's right.
But now none of that happens. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So in terms of rebooting that, I guess, and if that's even possible, I got the impression from your comments that one of the things, and maybe I have this wrong, in terms of detaching it from the city and making it kind of independent, possibly. Have I got that right, or
well,
I don't want to read in anything of what you were saying, but I got the impression It's like, okay, something needs to happen to take control of this beyond the status quo right now. So what do you see happening there to kind of give it the injection it needs? Because I mean, Kitchener, I went and saw Neil Young at a place that's only got 1,000 more seats than Guelph.
The odd,
right? And if Neil Young went to Guelph, he could probably play for a whole week.
He could.
Fill it, right? So he's probably the exception rather than, right? But It just seems, other than the occasional roller derby, the Siemens Center is empty a lot of the time when hockey's not in. So
yeah, you're right. So it's an honest. These are the types of honest questions that, you know, I think constituents expect from their councillors. You want to show consensus and build that sort of build on the democratic process at City Hall. But sometimes you do need to agitate, and sometimes you need to ask questions that are difficult. And part of the Sleeman Center question is just why. Why are we missing out on events? Honest questions and expect honest answers. I have heard, you know, various reasons why. Parking being an impediment. You know, the fact that we could use an upgrade to our sound or our stage equipment that, you know, when the Tragically Hip comes, they bring their own sound and stage. You know, unless the act is big enough, they don't bring that type of equipment on the road with them. Mm-hmm. They would expect us to have that for them. So there are... I think there was an article that I was quoted on in the Merc, you know, thank the Merc for the
what's left of the Merc,
talking about the Sleeman Center reaching its full potential. And I always go back to whether or not it depends on which day you get me on. If we could have an independent, event coordination company promote it, a promotion company, and come in and look to utilize it. Mm-hmm. Is it a lease with them? Is it a straight up sale with them? Mm-hmm. Those are all questions that I'm open to having. I don't necessarily have an opinion on how we get there. I just have an opinion that it should be used more, because in London, the Budweiser Garden, I think it's still called, in Oshawa, the GM place,
Kingston.
Yep. You know, you've got these great facilities, whether they're city owned or they're team owned. They're turning out 300 events a year. Of those, only 400 of them are hockey games. You know, and they've got something going on almost on a weekly basis. Maybe I shouldn't say 300, but you know, you've got events going on there on a weekly basis. And you know, I love our Sleeman Center, but I also understand that it needs to be doing more for our city than rec hockey when the Storm aren't playing. It's a beautiful facility. It's got a lot of sort of modern amenities, and we just need to continue to have the conversation about better utilization, because that, I mean, it doesn't just help us on the bottom line. It also helps our downtown, which is great to think about. We're going to have parking structures in the next few years being built. That's going to take a lot of the pressure off sort of event day parking. Mm-hmm. The next step would be to start filling it with events and really seeing that churn downtown of events and economic growth.
That's one of those things, too, because I remember seeing that on your blog, actually, about the Sleeman Center. And it's like, yeah, why don't we use the Sleeman Center more? And it's one of those things that almost falls through the cracks.
Well, it does, yeah. I know the context around Baker Street, which I'm not adverse to talking about. I think Baker Street has great opportunities. I think it could be a great project for our city. But, you know, we've had this conversation on council drift towards needing this iconic city center downtown. And I keep coming back to, well, I think we might already have one of those. and although I want to see the Baker Street happen, I really do. I don't want to lose sight of the fact that in the shadow of Baker Street is the Sleeman Center.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm. So that's very true.
And we can turn that into a conference center.
And River Run, too.
And the River... Oh, sorry, that's... Yeah, you're great. Great point. The River Run Center as well. Although I do believe the River Run Center is... more utilized Sleeman Center, which is fantastic. But again, not with an agenda. It's just asking honest questions about how we can make it better. Yeah.
Well, unfortunately, that's about all the honest questions we can ask for today. but if you want to tell people how they can get in touch with you and...
Sure, yeah. Well, first of all, I'm a fan of the show.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
This has been great.
That's very nice.
I was listening in the hallway beforehand, and I love the dialogue. It's great.
Oh,
good banter.
Thank you.
how you can reach out to me, I have a website, ward1guelph.ca. It's all ward1guelph. So ward1guelph.ca on Facebook, Twitter, ward1guelph.ca online. All my information is posted for contacting me on those sources. So, and I also maintain a newsletter if you'd like to sign up for it. It's on ward1guelph.ca. It's a quick sign-up page, and I'll add you to the list, and I send that out about quarterly.
Great. So, Dan Gibson, thanks so much for taking the time, and we appreciate all you do and for coming in today and telling us about it. And we'll hope to have you back again, because I think we still had questions left
yes.
over.
Yes. Yeah, I feel like we scratched the surface on some hot topics here. Yeah. Terrific, guys. Thank you.
And that's all for this week's Open Sources Guelph. Just for show notes coming up, we will have Guelph MPP and Minister of Education Liz Sandals on 2 weeks from today. So that's March 31st. And we will also have Green Party of Ontario leader Mike Schreiner. He's going to be on our Earth Day show on April the 21st. So, like for Dan, if you have any questions for either of them, feel free to get in touch with us. I'll tell you how to do that. Our website is opensourcesguelph.com. We are on Open Sources Newswire on Facebook at @OS_Guelph is on Twitter. And if you want to download this episode or any previously broadcast episode of Open Sources Guelph, go to Podbean, look for Guelph Politicast, and download away and listen to the show on whatever you listen to find podcasts on. You can find me at Adam A. Donaldson on Twitter, or go to guelphpolitico.blogspot.ca.
Scotty Hertz on Twitter, also Scotty Hertz on Facebook, and Dan, Titler School as library. I just want to get that in there as
until
well.
The next show.
Yes.
Now that Scotty's planted that seed, we will turn things over to DJ Sounds Good to Me. She'll be here at the top of the hour on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. And without further ado, we will pass things over to her, and we will see you back here next week for more Open Sources. Oh,